This is the Medical Beat on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right. Okay. Hey, good morning, everybody. You're listening to FM 97.1 Talk. This is the Medical Beat, where we talk about all things medical with interviews with leading experts in the St. Louis area and elsewhere. It's a beautiful day today, and we're recording this remotely in the age of COVID, and I think we're finally getting the glitches worked out. So woohoo, yay us. We're going to talk about a fascinating topic today, and we've got a great guest to talk about it with us. And we're going to talk about a topic that I think is something that is very much on people's minds and is something that is very important going forward. But it's also a topic for which we very seldom see rational, level-headed discussion. You know, mostly we see like angry people with very strong opinions one way or the other. And it's a very medically related topic. And the topic that we're going to talk about today is cannabis. We're going to talk about cannabis, and we're going to talk about, you know, what are the potential harms of cannabis? What are the potential benefits of cannabis? What is the current legal status? And maybe what would be the best laws to handle this going forward in the future. So by way of introduction, to talk about these topics with us today, we have Dr. Arturo Taca. Say hi, Dr. Taca.
Hello. Good morning, everyone.
Hello. Good morning. Yeah. Hey, so glad to have you with us today. So Dr. Taca is board certified in general psychiatry and also is board certified in addiction medicine. So Dr. Taca is a physician who is the medical director of InSynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehab Program here in the St. Louis area. It's an excellent outpatient rehab program. If you want to look it up, it's spelled kind of funny, isn't it, Dr. Taka?
I-N-S-Y-N?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you spell it for everybody? If you took the words in and then the word synergy and smush them together, you got the name.
InSynergy. There we go. Yes, yes. So just remember there's that Y in there. So it's in, yeah, so it's InSynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehab Program here in St. Louis. So we're gonna talk about cannabis now. So I guess there are so many things I want to ask, and I think so many things that the listeners want to know. But I think before we get into the good and bad of it here, let's talk about what is the legal status of cannabis, because I'm confused about that. Did they legalize it? Did they legalize it in Illinois? What's the deal with Missouri? Can you, walk us through that? Yeah.
Yeah, you're not the only one that's confused. This whole story of marijuana and cannabis is not only interesting and fascinating, but it's very unique. And it is very confusing to people who are trying to understand the evolution of this market. So in the end of 2018, the Missouri voters voted to legalize medical marijuana. And since it's medical now, it qualifies for discussions on medical shows like this, the Medical Beat. And we have to talk about it as a medical option for some people.
Yeah,
so in 2018, it was voted at, we were the 33rd state in the country to legalize it for medical purposes. And right now there's 11 states that have voted for its recreational use in adults. And that's the current state, the most recent change in Illinois. That's where we're at right now. So most of the states have some kind of legislation that allows the use of marijuana for medical reasons, and a big chunk of states are pursuing the recreational status as well for adults only.
Got it. Okay, for adults. So in Illinois, it's legal, basically legal just if you want to, and in Missouri, it's legal for medical purposes if certified in some way by a physician, or how does that work?
Well, the process here in Missouri is quite confusing. If you went to the website that would give guidance, there's lots of FAQs for patients who are interested in getting it. but very little guidance for doctors. And that's one big issue with it, because I think the people who are at risk, I think a lot of risk, are the physicians who are pursuing this. And we it's not defined whether or not we're protected by malpractice laws if your patient has a bad outcome. So there's still a lot of questions on our end how to do it if you're interested in doing it. But the process is relatively easy. So if a patient or somebody has a qualifying condition, and the list is very, very long, and I refer you to the Division of Health and Senior Services in Missouri to get that list, they would go to a physician that's not certified or qualified, just an interested physician who would fill out and do an attestation that you qualify for medical marijuana. Once you get that form filled out, you apply for a card. They call it the green card, right? It's a different kind of green card.
Okay.
Yeah, and so with that card, you're able to walk into a dispensary and purchase medical marijuana for your purposes. So that's the process. And I'm as I describe it, I'm sure you're thinking so many other questions. How does the doctor get involved? How much do you write? What's the prescription look like? And right now, it's not really defined. So there's a lot of questions still in this whole process.
Yeah. So it sounds like, among other things, I guess physicians need to be worried that we might get sued for certifying someone, or is this going to cross federal law, or what, how's that work out?
The worry is if you have a bad outcome. Suppose somebody becomes psychotic, or somebody becomes suicidal, or they have a bad outcome or side effect, and there's a bad outcome like death or something like that, and so the family could argue, why are you giving a medication that has known side effects that's illegal on a federal level? And no one's really tested or set the precedent, but eventually that's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. And how about, I guess the other overlapping issue is, am I correct in understanding that it's still in some way not legal by federal law, but more legal by state law? Who wins, federal versus state?
Well, I think in the previous administration, they said that to answer that question, it was up to the states to decide. And that's what we're seeing. But the interesting thing about this whole cannabis story, it is a story of ironies. And if you study it from the beginning to the end, it is full of ironies. And at the very least, a very interesting story to be told.
Right. Yeah. It's a lot of things going on with that, and we're gonna talk more about that. I hear music in the background, and that music means that Chad is giving us a hint that we need to go out on break. When we get back from break, we're gonna talk more about cannabis with Dr. Taka, and that's gonna include there are some proven benefits of cannabis. There are some controversial possible benefits of cannabis. And of course, there is some bad stuff too. So, I see we have the Doobie Brothers in the background. How appropriate.
All right.
Okay. So we're going to talk about all those things when we come back. And thanks again for being here, Dr. Taka. And we'll be right back.
Okay.
And the crowd is growing. You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. 97.1 FM Talk. You're listening to The Medical Beat. And I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. We have with us here Dr. Art Taka from InSynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehab. He's board certified in both general psychiatry and in addiction medicine. Our topic today is cannabis. And as you all know, or as you're probably aware, I think with cannabis, there is a lot of, there's some craziness to the advocacy for cannabis that some people are putting forward. And there's also some craziness to the anti-cannabis with the anti-cannabis crowd. So we're going to talk about just the facts, and we're going to hear just the facts from an expert who's board certified in addiction medicine. So thank you again for being here with us, Dr. Taka. And I think the first thing we want to ask about is because we're going to talk about what we know that marijuana is approved for medical purposes in some states. So let's start with that. I think, as I understand it, medical uses of marijuana, there are some things that we know for sure it really works for, and then there's a long list of things that people think it works for, but maybe it really doesn't. So can you walk us through that, Dr. Taka?
No problem. It is confusing. It is confusing. Yeah. Just because it's called medical marijuana doesn't equal to, you know, a pre-existing body of evidence, okay? But there are legitimate uses that are FDA approved. For example, in 1986, a medication called Marinol, dronabinol, was approved by the FDA in 1986. So it always had a medical form of marijuana. And it was approved for appetite stimulation and anti-emetic for people who were struggling at the time with HIV and cancer. And so that's always been available. And it was a Schedule II drug when it first came out. I'm sorry, Schedule I. And now it has been reclassified to a Schedule III drug. This is Marinol. And in most recently, the WHO, World Health Organization, convened and recommended that Marinol be reclassified as Schedule IV. And so for the audience out there, the schedule system kind of defines the usefulness and the addiction potential for a drug. So for example, Schedule I drugs have no medical purpose, and we are not allowed to write that. Then we are, as physicians, allowed to write the Schedule 2, 3, 4, and 5. And as you go higher, you have, you know, less risk for addiction. So
basically bigger numbers mean less dangerous, and smaller numbers mean more dangerous and less useful.
Correct. And so Marinol, a synthetic form of THC, has a legitimate FDA-approved indications for nausea and cachexia for certain conditions. Now, moving forward, another FDA, most recent FDA approval for a form of cannabis or cannabinoid is CBD. So a high dose of CBD in the form of a medicine called Epidiolex was recently approved for a rare form of childhood seizures. CBD is not THC, and CBD is enjoying a big, you know, popularity right now because you can see it all over the grocery store, over the counter, and there are stores popping up. But CBD is not THC. It doesn't have the psychotropic effects. But CBD in lower doses that are sold over the counter are being touted as kind of cure-alls for everything. But there is one form of CBD that's pretty high dose that's used for a rare kind of childhood seizure. By the way, the little child who inspired the movement for the use of CBD medically, she just passed away. She just passed away of COVID.
Really?
I did not know that a couple weeks ago.
That's sad. I had no idea.
She was experiencing, I think, 500 seizures a day. And then when her parents decided to use off-label CBD, you know, that was reduced to a few seizures a day. So her story was inspired by Dr. Sanjay Gupta, who, as you probably witnessed the last couple of years, is a very, very big advocate for the use of cannabinoids in medical spaces.
So it really did help her a lot with the seizures, but then she's a pretty young victim of COVID. That's terrible.
I think she might have been 13. and she passed away. Yeah, wow. Charlotte Figge was her name. Yeah, sad story. Yeah. But she did inspire a lot. Yeah, she did inspire millions of people. Very inspirational story.
Wow.
Those are the legitimate uses, FDA-approved, data-backed, evidence-based medication or products that are available. Now, we have these conditions that the states have determined qualify for the use of medical marijuana. And at least in Missouri, the list is very long. So some of the qualifying conditions include, and this is not a complete list, but things like cancer, epilepsy, glaucoma, migraine, chronic pain, and psychiatric disorders, including PTSD. Obviously, HIV and AIDS has been kind of lumped into that. And quote unquote, any terminal illness or any chronic debilitating medical condition. And that could be arthritis, to Crohn's, to sickle cell, to Alzheimer's. So the list is quite large and long.
Yeah, and it sounds like a list that's not coming from doctors. It sounds like a list that's coming from politicians or lobbyists, or I don't know.
It's partly, and I'm sure there's some medical guidance to this. But again, a lot of what we put together in Missouri was kind of copied from other states and what they were doing.
Okay.
So we weren't, we were the 33rd state to do this. But again, the medical marijuana lists in the states are kind of loosely put together. But the way it got approved is not the typical regulatory process that we are kind of used to. You know, we don't vote in the states whether or not we use hydroxychloroquine for for COVID.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But that's what happened. You know, that's what happened. Yeah. The people spoke in the country, you know, this is a democracy and we vote. The question is whether this is the right way to bring about, you know, medical innovation. And that's yet to be answered.
Right, yes, yeah, yet to be answered, yeah. Oh, and how about so in your work running the Insynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehab Program, how big of a role do you see for cannabis abuse in your daily practice? Is that a large part of your practice or not a large part of your practice, or what does that look like from the point of view of a drug rehab program?
Well, it's interesting now since it's become so available medically and recreationally. The definition of cannabis abuse is kind of watered down now. Are you really abusing it, or are you using it because it's available legally?
Yeah.
So when there's a definition out there of, you know, a lot of people are using it just because it's available. So we see a lot of people coming in, and when we do a urine drug screen for alcohol dependence or opiate dependence, many times it's marijuana is positive, but that's not the reason why they're coming in.
Right.
And we'll talk about later on, you wanted to talk about, is it a gateway drug? But there's a lot of people, especially a lot of the patients that I see, like to argue that it's the exit drug for them, especially for people struggling with opiate addiction when they're going through withdrawals. One of the popular or favorite illicit uses of cannabis is helping with the withdrawal symptoms. So it's pretty interesting how this is kind of, again, a story of ironies, you know.
Yeah.
And you can expose yourself to marijuana and it could be a gateway drug, but a lot of people are convinced that it's a way out of using drugs.
Right, or way out of using drugs that are worse than cannabis. So,
Correct.
Can you walk us through some of the known bad effects of cannabis? What are the bad parts?
Well, we know that
there's our 30-second thing, so we'll let you start.
Okay.
Well, go Actually, we'll save that for the third segment because I don't want to cut you off. So we'll get to the bad parts in the third segment.
Okay.
We really will. So we'll talk about that soon. So yeah. So hey, we've been talking with Dr. Art Taka from Insynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehab, and we're talking about cannabis, the good, the bad, the ugly, the legal, the illegal. And when we come back, we're going to hear more about the downsides of cannabis. And we're also going to ask Dr. Taka, you know, if he could dictate policy, what would he make the law? What would he think? So we'll let you be Emperor of the United States for just a few seconds there, Dr. Taka. Won't that be fun? We'll be back and be back soon. Thank you.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. For those of you just now joining us, we're here with Dr. Art Taka, who is board certified in general psychiatry and also in addiction medicine. He's from the Insynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehab Program. And we've been talking about cannabis, and we started out talking about, you know, what is the legal status of cannabis around here, and also what are some of the proven benefits and some of the unproven purported benefits. And now we're going to talk more about what are the downsides, or what are the proven potential harms of cannabis. So let's talk about that. And gosh, where do we start? Where do we start?
Where do
Dr.
we start?
Taka? Yeah,
let's start
good.
Okay, how about 3000 BC? That's where we
okay.
can start. When
right.
when cannabis was discovered back then, most of the world was using cannabis as an industrial kind of raw material, using it for sails and clothes and textiles and things like that. But in Central Asia, they were discovering that it could be used as an intoxicant. So that's when we started, humans started using parts of the plant to get a feeling, an intoxicant. So as we jump to the 19th century, the 20th century, the plant changed. The potency has increased to points where you know, you can get psychotic. And the marijuana now, compared to the marijuana that we were exposed to in the 80s or 90s, totally different plant. So as a psychiatrist, I've seen, and I've hospitalized dozens of patients over the years for cannabis-induced psychosis. And I'm sure you've seen that also in the when you're doing your hospital work way back when. So psychosis right now is something that we're really afraid of. And now there's some strong evidence that suggests that the earlier that you expose a brain that is at risk for developing schizophrenia will develop schizophrenia earlier compared to somebody who smokes marijuana later on in life. So there's something in the exposure in the early years that really kind of primes the brain for bad outcome in the future.
And as I understand it, like heavy use is worse than light use, and using earlier is worse than using later. Like, and with a high risk, what, I guess like teens through the early 20s at least, or something like that.
Yeah, early teens. You know, when the brain's developing, especially there's this one study that's very. It kind of answers: is cannabis a gateway drug? And for many, it can be. But to answer it, yes and no, not everybody. There's a lot of evidence that suggests that most people that are exposed to cannabis and smoke it don't develop another substance use problem. So, but there is a specific, you know, population that is kind of primed for other substance use disorders. Especially, there was this one study I wanted to refer to where early exposure to cannabis caused a problem with how dopamine was used. And so when you expose the brain early in life, future brain activity will show a dampened kind of use of dopamine. And dopamine is important because you need dopamine to feel good. So this can answer whether or not it's a gateway drug, because if you smoke marijuana early and then you grow up and you're dopamine deficient, you're going to look for dopamine. And an easy way to get dopamine is using drugs or drinking. So in that particular situation, yes, it can prime the brain to want or crave other drugs in the future.
To make people much more vulnerable to
pretty much
any type of drug abuse. Yeah.
That's correct. That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
So you're right. When exposed early, not a good thing. And if you're exposed more, lots of bad outcomes, psychosis, and future substance abuse.
Yeah. Okay. So you'd say there's at least some truth to the idea that it can be a gateway drug for other types of drug abuse.
No, absolutely. Especially people who are vulnerable. You know, people who have dopamine dysfunction already. And again, environment is huge too. It's not all biological. Environment also plays a big role in exposure to a substance. So you don't want to count, you know, my grandma used to say, tell me who you are. Show me your friends and tell me who you are. So exposure is very, very important. So surround yourself with good people. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I guess there's possible risk of psychosis if exposed early, increased risk of other types of substance abuse, other harms too, as far as
psychosis is the kind of the worst thing that we see as a result. But oftentimes, current use can lead to simple things like increased anxiety or panic attack. I have a lot of patients that come in and say, you know what, I don't really like the smoking because it makes me paranoid. And again, that reflects to the potency of the marijuana. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, marijuana potency was in the single digits. And now we're seeing forms of marijuana that goes up to especially things like wax. Have you ever heard of wax? Wax is a type of kind of a marijuana that's extracted, and it's smoked on a cigarette, and it looks waxy. It's a brown, yellowish, brownish kind of waxy substance that very highly concentrated with THC. You know, the interesting and one of the ironies to this is at least for Illinois, and other states may do this as well. As you get higher in potency for recreational marijuana, so if you wanted to buy a higher potent strain of marijuana recreationally, you get taxed higher. So you pay more taxes to the government if you get a higher grade marijuana, you know, above 30%.
Yeah, and it just occurs to me that you get taxed higher, and you also get taxed while you are higher, right?
Good one.
Badoom.
That's right.
I had to squeeze that in there.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And I guess another thing I wanted, because I know you told me about some of the crazy history behind cannabis, and there's probably a lot to talk about. Can you kind of start that one?
So let's
1700. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's jump from 2000 BC to the 1700s or the 1600s, when the early colonists from Europe, many parts of Europe were already enjoying the industrial kind of benefits of hemp and its fiber. So the Queen of England actually had a law for all the colonists that came to America and who had acreage to farm the land. For every 60 acres of land, they had to reserve 1 acre for cannabis. And if they didn't obey this, they would get fined. So another irony in this whole cannabis story, you would get fined if you didn't grow cannabis in your yard. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. So you get fined if you didn't grow it, and then later you get fined if you did. So yeah.
Oh, you get fined and thrown into jail? I mean, it was
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you move forward, and so to the 19th century, especially here in America, when there was a prohibition movement. And there was one person in particular, his name was Harry Anslinger.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. This is The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. For those of you just now joining us, we're here with Dr. Art Taka, who is board certified in general psychiatry and also in addiction medicine. He's from the Insynergy Alcohol and Drug Rehab Program. And we've been talking about cannabis, and we started out talking about, what is the legal status of cannabis around here, and also what are some of the proven benefits and some of the unproven purported benefits. And now we're going to talk more about what are the downsides, or proven potential harms of cannabis. So let's talk about that. And where do we start? Where do we start?
Where do we start?
Taka?
Yeah, let's start.
Let's good.
Okay, how about 3000 BC? That's where we
okay.
can start. When
right.
when cannabis was discovered back then, most of the world was using cannabis as an industrial kind of raw material, using it for sails and clothes and textiles and things like that. But yeah. in Central Asia, they were discovering that it could be used as an intoxicant. So that's when we started, humans started using parts of the plant to get a feeling, an intoxicant. So as we jump to the 19th century, the 20th century, the plant changed. The potency has increased to points where you can get psychotic. And the marijuana now, compared to the marijuana that we were exposed to in the 80s or 90s, is a totally different plant. So as a psychiatrist, I've seen and I've hospitalized dozens of patients over the years for cannabis-induced psychosis. And I'm sure you've seen that also when you're doing your hospital work way back when. So psychosis right now is something that we're really afraid of. And now there's some strong evidence that suggests that the earlier that you expose a brain that is at risk for developing schizophrenia will develop schizophrenia earlier compared to somebody who smokes marijuana later on in life. So there's something in the exposure in the early years that really kind of primes the brain for bad outcome in the future.
And as I understand it, like heavy use is worse than light use, and using earlier is worse than using later. Like, and with a high risk, well, I guess like teens through the early 20s at least, or something like that.
Yeah, early teens. You know, when the brain's developing, especially there's this one study that's very. It kind of answers: is cannabis a gateway drug? And for many, it can be. But to answer it, yes and no, not everybody. There's a lot of evidence that suggests that most people that are exposed to cannabis and smoke it don't develop another substance use problem. But there is a specific, population that is kind of primed for other substance use disorders. Especially, there was this one study I wanted to refer to where early exposure to cannabis caused a problem with how dopamine was used. And so when you expose the brain early in life, future brain activity will show a dampened kind of use of dopamine. And dopamine is important because you need dopamine to feel good. So this can answer whether or not it's a gateway drug, because if you smoke marijuana early and then you grow up and you're dopamine deficient, you're going to look for dopamine. And an easy way to get dopamine is using drugs or drinking. So in that particular situation, yes, it can prime the brain to want or crave other drugs in the future.
To make people much more vulnerable to
pretty much
any type of drug abuse. Yeah.
That's correct. That is correct. That is absolutely correct.
Yeah.
So you're right. When exposed early, not a good thing. And if you're exposed more, lots of bad outcomes, psychosis, and future substance abuse.
Yeah, okay. So you'd say there's at least some truth to the idea that it can be a gateway drug for other types of drug abuse.
No, absolutely, especially people who are vulnerable. You know, people who have dopamine dysfunction already. And again, environment is huge, too. It's not all biological. Environment also plays a big, big role in exposure to a substance. So you don't want to count, you know, my grandma used to say, tell me who you are. Yeah, show me your friends and tell me who you are. So exposure is very, very important. So surround yourself with good people. Yeah.
Yes, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I guess there's possible risk of psychosis if exposed early, increased risk of other types of substance abuse, other harms too, as far as
Mm-hmm. You know, psychosis is the kind of the worst thing that we see as a result. But oftentimes, current use can lead to simple things like increased anxiety or panic attack. I have a lot of patients that come in and say, you know what, I don't really like the smoking because it makes me paranoid. And again, that reflects to the potency of the marijuana. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, marijuana potency was in the single digits. And now we're seeing forms of marijuana that goes up to especially things like wax. Have you ever heard of wax? Wax is a type of kind of a marijuana that's extracted, and it's smoked on a cigarette, and it looks waxy. It's a brown, yellowish, brownish kind of waxy substance that very highly concentrated with THC. You know, the interesting and one of the ironies to this is at least for Illinois and other states may do this as well. As you get higher in potency for recreational marijuana, so if you wanted to buy a higher potent strain of marijuana recreationally, you get taxed higher. So you pay more taxes to the government if you get a higher grade marijuana, you know, above 30%.
Yeah, and it just occurs to me that you get taxed higher, and you also get taxed while you are higher, right?
Good one.
That's right. I had to squeeze that in there.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And I guess another thing I wanted, because I know you told me about some of the crazy history behind cannabis, and there's probably a lot to talk about. Can you kind of start that one? Like,
yeah.
Like, so
okay.
I, so let's 1700. Yeah.
So let's jump from 2000 BC to the 1700s or the 1600s, when the early colonists from Europe, many parts of Europe were already enjoying the industrial kind of benefits of hemp and its fiber. So the Queen of England actually had a law for all the colonists that came to America and who had acreage to farm the land. For every 60 acres of land, they had to reserve 1 acre for cannabis. And if they didn't obey this, they would get fined. So another irony in this whole cannabis story, you would get fined if you didn't grow cannabis in your yard. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting. So you get fined if you didn't grow it, and then later you get fined if you did. So yeah.
Oh, you get fined and thrown into jail? I mean, it was
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you move forward, and so to the 19th century, especially here in America, when there was a prohibition movement, and there was one person in particular. His name was Harry Anslinger. And he was the one of the directors that that tried to author the whole prohibition movement. And when that failed, he put his attention to cannabis. And he single-handedly, arguably, was the main force of creating kind of a hysteria, coupled with some xenophobia at the time. Unfortunately, there was a dark age of United States, where he publicly vilified marijuana its uses, blamed many of the immigrants that were coming to the United States, that they were bringing cannabis, this poison, to the United States. Many immigrants from Mexico, from the Philippines, and interestingly enough, lumped jazz performers into that group. And
really?
Yeah,
those evil jazz performers. Oh,
evil jazz performers. Yeah, yeah, they were poisoning and raping and pillaging our women here. And so him and a couple co-conspirators at the time, namely some of the people who controlled the newspaper industry. And that was the first time we saw yellow journalism, the term yellow journalism. And with that as a tool, kind of created this hysteria that marijuana was a real evil drug and caused murders and psychosis and suicides. And a lot of people remember this one movie that was created that time called Reefer Madness.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. I do remember. Yeah. And Reefer Madness, I looked it up on Wikipedia. Reefer Madness has one of the worst movies of the 1930s, officially, according to official sources.
Yeah. Yeah. Terrible acting.
Right.
So I would guess.
Yeah.
But interesting.
Lots of interesting history there.
Yeah.
Lots of irony. So we'll be back. Yeah. Hey, we've been talking about cannabis with Dr. Taka. When we come back, we're going to talk about, speaking of paranoia, we're going to talk about conspiracy theories surrounding COVID. And we'll be back.
You said the sweet little honey, well, her high on your money is going to take every penny you got. Says she never going to get it because I've already spent it, bro. So go with the pot.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. You're listening to The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. And we're here with Dr. Art Taka. We've been talking about cannabis, but we are going to switch gears now, and we're going to talk about something different. We're going to have, for the very first time, we're going to have our Quack Alert feature. With Quack Alert, we talk about either bad science or science that has been misrepresented in the media or just other stuff that's not true. And specifically, we're going to talk about conspiracy theories related to the COVID-19 outbreak. So can you bring us into the Quack Alert there, Chad? Yeah, there we go.
Quack Alert.
Yeah. I love that sound effect. The radio station did that for me. Wasn't that nice of them? I really liked it. They kind of got that groovy music in the background. Can you turn up the music a little bit, Chad? Yeah, turn that up a little bit. Yeah, I like the music there. It's like from the 60s or something. I don't know.
It's like a sitar.
Cool. Yeah. Is that what that is, that instrument?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
How appropriate.
I didn't know that is appropriate. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay, thanks, Chad. So, yeah. All right. So that's the Quack Alert. So the Quack Alert topic we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about conspiracy theories surrounding the COVID-19 outbreak. Psychologists say that in times of uncertainty and fear, you got the duck there. You got the duck. In times of uncertainty and fear, a lot of people tend to gravitate toward conspiracy theories, toward stuff that. stuff that really kind of on superficial examination is pretty clearly not true, but beliefs have a large following anyway. Yeah. So we're going to talk about one specific. We can't go over all the conspiracy theories, but we're going to talk about one specific conspiracy theory that has taken hold. I think it's taken hold in England more than it's taken hold here in the United States. But that's the idea that the COVID-19 outbreak is linked to the 5G network, to the 5G telephone network. Right. Yeah. And I'm not even sure where to start with this. They don't have a really good specific way to link the two, but one people who believe this conspiracy theory, and the conspiracy theory has been repeated by even some Hollywood types like Woody Harrelson and John Cusack have been have repeated this, on their on their social media accounts. But in England, it's gotten bad enough where people have attacked cell phone towers, and there have been more than 20 cell phone towers attacked by people who believe this conspiracy theory. And I don't even know where to start to explain to the audience how it's not true, but there's not any plausible connection between the two. In Iran, for example, not too long ago, Iran was one of the worst places for the COVID-19 outbreak. And in Iran, there's no 5G whatsoever. It is true that the 5G network has been rolled out to the dense urban areas first, and then and some of those dense urban areas also had the worst of the COVID outbreak, including Wuhan, China. I mean, Wuhan, China was one of the early adopters of the 5G network, but so were a lot of other big cities. So no actual connection there.
Can I ask you a scientific question?
Yeah, sure thing.
We are on the medical beat show, right? So
we are.
Is there any evidence that 5G does not cause COVID?
Yeah, I would say yes. Oh, I guess it's kind of like how do you prove a negative, you know? But I think so. I mean, the part that there's there are parts of the world with a really, really bad COVID outbreak that has no 5G whatsoever, and even parts of the United States that don't have 5G yet. As far as we can tell, COVID is spreading there just as quickly as anywhere else. So
that's good. That's good. Now I can sleep. I can sleep better at night.
You can sleep better at night.
Yeah.
You can surf the internet as much as you want.
I can surf the internet. So let me ask you, so it's not the 5G phone, it's the cell towers that everybody's getting kind of crazy about.
I think so, yeah. Or just the signals through the airwaves between the towers and the phones.
I see.
Yeah. But the other part of this, Art, the other part of this that I think is especially interesting is that there are companies that have examined the social media interaction that's been pushing the conspiracy theories, and specifically for the conspiracy theory about 5G being related to COVID-19, they found that a lot of the social media accounts that are pushing this are inauthentic accounts. In other words, they are bots and fake accounts pushing this idea about 5G. And it's being done in a way that seems to be coordinated on a large scale. And according to them, it's being done in a coordinated large-scale way that appears to be the work of a government, of a foreign government. Yeah.
Interesting.
So apparently there is some government, presumably it's not our own government, apparently there is some government somewhere that has decided that it's worthwhile to go through the trouble to push this conspiracy theory into the consciousness of the United States and the United Kingdom, or presumably other parts of the English-speaking world.
Wow, so they wanted to take this literally viral.
They did, right. They wanted to take this viral, yes. Yeah.
Take this virus, get to go viral.
Right. Yeah. And I guess as far as why they would do that, I don't think they would. And this is just my opinion. This is not my expertise. I don't think they would do this just because they want to make people attack cell phone towers. I don't think it's worth it for that. But certainly the COVID-19 outbreak has been very damaging in the United States. I think there's no doubt about that this is causing us lots and lots of damage. And I think, and again, this is just me, but I think that pushing wacky conspiracy theories makes truth harder to get your hand around. It makes the public more, it makes it more difficult for the public to deal with the reality of the outbreak if people are spouting conspiracy theories.
I think you know who's behind it are the manufacturers of the flip phones that want to get the business again. They want to go back,
right.
Go back to 2G.
That could be. Maybe it's the 2G crowd that wants to get us back to 2G.
Yeah. By the way, I used to have an old Nokia that lasted me a week before I needed to charge it again. I miss those days.
Wow.
Yeah. You remember those old cell phones? Yeah. I do remember those.
Yeah. I'm old enough to remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was like probably like a 2G phone.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, hey, the music is playing. So we're going to wrap up in just a little bit. Hey, I want to thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Taka from InSynergy.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Yeah. InSynergy, spelled like in and the word synergy, S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y. There we go. InSynergy, okay. Alcohol and Drug Rehab here in St. Louis. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll be back next week.
You're listening to The Medical Beat.
All right. Hey, we're back. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Harvey. You're listening to The Medical Beat, 97.1 FM Talk. And we're here with Dr. Art Taka. We've been talking about cannabis, but we are going to switch gears now, and we're going to talk about something different. We're going to have, for the very first time, we're going to have our Quack Alert feature. With Quack Alert, we talk about either bad science or science that has been misrepresented in the media, or just other stuff that's not true. And specifically, we're going to talk about conspiracy theories related to the COVID-19 outbreak. So can you bring us into the Quack Alert there, Chad? Yeah, there we go.
Quack Alert.
Yeah. I love that sound effect. The radio station did that for me. Wasn't that nice of them? I really liked it. They kind of got that groovy music in the background. Can you turn up the music a little bit, Chad? Yeah, turn that up a little bit. Yeah, I like the music there. It's like from the 60s or something. I don't know.
Like a sitar. Cool.
Yeah. Is that what that is, that instrument?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
How appropriate. Well,
I didn't know that is appropriate. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Okay, thanks, Chad. So, yeah. All right. So that's the Quack Alert. So the Quack Alert topic we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about conspiracy theories surrounding the COVID-19 outbreak. Psychologists say that in times of uncertainty and fear, we got the duck. In times of uncertainty and fear, a lot of people tend to gravitate toward conspiracy theories, toward stuff that, stuff that really kind of on superficial examination is pretty clearly not true, but the beliefs have a large following anyway. Yeah. So we're going to talk about one specific, we can't go over all the conspiracy theories, but we're going to talk about one specific conspiracy theory that has taken hold. I think it's taken hold in England more than it's taken hold here in the United States. But that's the idea that the COVID-19 outbreak is linked to the 5G network, to the 5G telephone network, right? Yeah, and I'm not even sure where to start with this. They don't have a really good specific way to link the two. But one people who believe this conspiracy theory, and the conspiracy theory has been repeated by even some Hollywood types like Woody Harrelson and John Cusack have repeated this, on their social media accounts. But in England, it's gotten bad enough where people have attacked cell phone towers, and there have been more than 20 cell phone towers attacked by people who believe this conspiracy theory. And I don't even know where to start to explain to the audience how it's not true, but there's not any plausible connection between the two. In Iran, for example, not too long ago, Iran was one of the worst places for the COVID-19 outbreak. And in Iran, there's no 5G whatsoever. It is true that the 5G network has been rolled out to the dense urban areas first, and then and some of those dense urban areas also had the worst of the COVID outbreak, including Wuhan, China. I mean, Wuhan, China was one of the early adopters of the 5G network, but so were a lot of other big cities. So no actual connection there.
Can I ask you a scientific question?
Yeah, sure thing.
Medical beat show, right? So
we are. We are.
Is there any evidence that 5G does not cause COVID?
Yeah, I would say yes. Oh. I guess it's kind of like how do you prove a negative, you know? But I think so. I mean, the part that there's there are parts of the world with a really, really bad COVID outbreak that has no 5G whatsoever, and even parts of the United States that don't have 5G yet. As far as we can tell, COVID is spreading there just as quickly as anywhere else. So
that's good. That's
yeah.
Good. Now I can sleep. I can sleep better at night.
You can sleep better at night.
Yeah.
You can surf the internet as much as you want.
I can surf the internet. So let me ask you, so it's not the 5G phone, it's the cell towers that everybody's getting kind of crazy about.
I think so, yeah. Or just the signals through the airwaves between the towers and the phones.
I see.
Yeah. But the other part of this, Art, the other part of this that I think is especially interesting is that there are companies that have examined the social media interaction that's been pushing the conspiracy theories, and specifically for the conspiracy theory about 5G being related to COVID-19, they found that they found that a lot of the social media accounts that are pushing this are inauthentic accounts. In other words, they are bots and fake accounts pushing this idea about 5G. And it's being done in a way that seems to be coordinated on a large scale. And according to them, it's being done in a coordinated large scale way that appears to be the work of a government, of a foreign government. Yeah.
Interesting.
So apparently there is some government, presumably it's not our own government, apparently there is some government somewhere that has decided that it's worthwhile to go through the trouble to push this conspiracy theory into the consciousness of the United States and the United Kingdom, or presumably other parts of the English-speaking world.
Wow, so they wanted to take this literally viral.
They did, right. They wanted to take this viral, yes. Yeah.
take this virus, get to go viral.
And I guess as far as why they would do that, I don't think they would, and this is just my opinion, this is not my expertise, I don't think they would do this just because they want to make people attack cell phone towers. I don't think it's worth it for that, but certainly the COVID-19 outbreak has been very damaging in the United States. I think there's no doubt about that this is causing us lots and lots of damage. And I think, and again, this is just me, but I think that pushing wacky conspiracy theories makes truth harder to get your hand around. It makes it more difficult for the public to deal with the reality of the outbreak if people are spouting conspiracy theories.
I think who's behind it are the manufacturers of the flip phones that want to get the business again. They want to go back,
right.
Go back to 2G.
That could be. Maybe it's the 2G crowd that wants to get us back to 2G.
Yeah. By the way, I used to have an old Nokia that lasted me a week before I needed to charge it again. I miss those days.
Wow.
Yeah, you remember those old cell phones? Yeah, those.
I do remember those. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was like probably like a 2G phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, hey, the music is playing. So we're going to wrap up in just a little bit. Hey, I want to thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Taka from InSynergy.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Yeah. InSynergy, spelled like in and the word synergy, S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y. There we go. InSynergy, okay. Alcohol and Drug Rehab here in St. Louis. And thank you, everyone, for joining us. And we'll be back next week.